This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. And in fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
Memphis, Tennessee native Booker T. Jones started playing the piano as a toddler, and he began singing in his church choir as a six-year-old. With the release of Green Onions in 1962, Booker T. and the MG's organ-infused Memphis soul sound became a number one hit on Billboard's R&B chart. Jones's music has been acknowledged by USA Today's 100 Best Songs in History and Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs of All Time. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer reporting from the North Carolina Music Fest in Greensboro, North Carolina. Come along and join the conversation with Booker T. Jones as he recalls growing up in Memphis, playing as a studio musician at Stax Recording Studio while still in high school, the story behind MG in his band's name, and his reverence for his adoring live audiences today, 57 years after the release of Green Onions. Jones is the recipient of 3 Grammys in addition to a Grammy Lifetime Award, and he's a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Musicians Hall of Fame and Museum in Nashville, Tennessee. Jones is also the author of the newly released autobiographical book, The Time is Tight, My Life Note by Note. Booker T. Jones, I thought it'd be so cool just to come to the festival and sit in the audience and listen to you. Uh-huh. But here we are, one-on-one.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I grew up with you, mentioned earlier.
Yeah, where'd
you
grow up?
Your music. I'm almost your age.
Oh, yeah. Where'd you grow up?
Well, my dad was from New Orleans in Metairie. Mm-hmm. But then he got his dad to Minnesota. So I was actually born in Minnesota.
Okay. Yeah.
But I'm out in California now.
So we're close to California, too, in Nevada. Mm-hmm.
So one of my curious things about you is, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Memphis. I was born in Memphis.
I was wondering, because I've spent time at Stax.
You did?
Yeah.
In the 70s, you did?
No, just recently I was there.
Oh, just recently?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Yeah. When did you first get into music? Was it tiny little kid? What happened? How did you start playing music?
Probably as soon as I can remember standing up, I was reaching up to the piano with my 2 fingers
really?
On tippy toes trying to play 2 notes on my grandmother's piano that was in my mother's house. It's the earliest memory I was trying to play.
Did you sing as a little kid?
I sang in church maybe when I was 6 years old, singing spirituals. I sang a spiritual solo when I was in Sunday school.
And when did you form your first band?
That was in high school with Maurice White. Maurice White was my neighbor, and he was the drummer in the band. It was me and Maurice White and a guy named Richard Shan, who played piano from South Memphis, and I was playing saxophone.
When did you decide to form Booker T. and the MGs?
That was not a conscious decision.
It wasn't. Interesting.
You know, I got a job as a session player at Stax Records when I was in 10th grade. I played baritone sax over there.
As a studio musician for other groups?
I played baritone sax on a record by Rufus and Carla Thomas called Cause I Love You. That's me playing the baritone sax.
Oh, wow.
That was put out in 1960, and I came out of an algebra class to go over there and do that. And they found out I could play piano, so I got a job after school as a session musician. And Booker T and the MGs was formed one day when the session that we were supposed to be playing for didn't materialize. So we had free studio time, and we used it to record a blues called Behavior.
So if you hadn't had this little gap in recording schedule, it might not have happened.
Yeah, it wouldn't have happened. There wasn't a gap. The Jim Stewart, the owner, was disappointed or something happened with the scheduled session, so we were there with nothing to do.
How Oh, interesting.
You know, Tom, I want you to get my book, which is just coming out soon.
I will.
It's called Time is Tight.
One more time, the name of the book.
It's called Time is Tight, and it's a little brown book, and it's coming out at the end of October, 1st of November, and this same question is in the book, and with a more detailed description.
I love it.
Yeah.
I'll be ordering that tomorrow, man.
Yeah, well, I'll have them send you one, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so the MGs.
Yeah.
Tell us about that part of the story.
Well, the MGs, the people, or the MGs, the name? Which? The MGs were the bass player. Louis Steinberg was the first bass player. Duck Dunn was the second bass player. But
in Memphis, people have told me two things. They told me that you had an MG sports car, and you named it after that. And then people said, no, that you named it for Memphis Group.
Well, the engineer had an MG sports car.
Okay.
He parked it out back. And then when they were looking for a name to name the band, they just saw this car there and said, Booker T and the MGs, just like that. But then we changed it and contacted British Leyland in London. They owned MGs. They didn't want anything to do with us. So we started calling it the Memphis Group.
Interesting. In Memphis, at Stax, they told me that when you guys went on the road, because of the racism that was endemic at that time, that you had to bring some white players with you. Was that true?
We traveled as an interracial band, two whites and two blacks. Mm-hmm. The difficulties of day-to-day life were overcome by whether we were going to stay at a white establishment or a black establishment. Black establishments were more liberal. They didn't mind the whites coming in. But the whites had to go in and rent the rooms.
Right.
And then we'd sneak in the back. Mm-hmm. Or the whites had to go in and buy the food. And we'd eat in the car.
That reminds me of the Lorraine Motel.
Yeah.
In that was one of the cool places where you could get together interracially.
Our white people stayed there from the beginning with no problem at the Lorraine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell me about some of your most touching memories of being on the road. Were there any moments that kind of game-changing for you?
Well, just getting to play on the road and playing for people like here tonight, that's a moving thing. All these people drive all these miles to come to see you and pay all this money.
So you still have a reverence and an appreciation and an understanding of how special, what a gift it is for you, right?
Oh, yeah, and they come up and say thank you. I seldom play, and somebody doesn't come and say thank you for coming over here and playing. And, you know, you get to meet the people, and they come back time after time again. So it becomes a relationship.
Tell me a little bit more about your time at Stax. I mean, you, like you said, 10th grade, 11th grade. Mm-hmm. In a way, you grew up with Stax, didn't you?
Well, those years and that period and what we did there defined my life, you know. It's I might not be here tonight, but I don't think I would be as accomplished without Stax, because they gave me the opportunity to do my thing, to arrange, to write strings, horns, songs, free reign in the recording studio. And it was two blocks from my house. It was an unheard of opportunity. I didn't have to go to Los Angeles or New York or London someplace.
They're giving me the signal you gotta go on stage pretty soon. Before you go, when was the last time you went back to the Stax Museum?
It's been a while. I think last time I was there, I played a concert.
Are you familiar with the academy that they started for kids in the neighborhood?
Yes, I was familiar. I remember when the idea was conceived in the mind of Deanie Parker. I remember when she told me that she wanted to do that. Yeah.
It's a touching, incredible story.
Yeah.
You know, the success rate of the graduates, it's like 100% going to college.
Yeah,
I mean, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, I'm just about to hire one. I forget her name, but they're out in Los Angeles. I'm just about to hire one to just sing on my album. Young lady that graduated from Stax.
Oh, cool. Well, only because you got to go on stage, I got to let you go. But I can't tell you how touching it is for me to meet you in person and visit with you and hang out.
Oh.
It's an honor.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way. And I'll tell you, And thanks for listening to my music. You know.
Oh, man, you're like I said, you're a part of my life.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. All right, well, good talking to you.
Thank you, Booker T. Okay. Love it. I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Greensboro, North Carolina. We'll see you here.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Seventy-five years ago, World War II ended. It was the deadliest military conflict in history, resulting in 85 million casualties. We mark the anniversary of the end of that war by celebrating the heroism of our greatest generation, those who served and those who supported their efforts at home. Join us virtually or in person. September 25th on the Capitol Mall in Washington, D.C. for an Arsenal Democracy flyover by dozens of historic World War II aircraft. Flyovers above the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. are scheduled for 11:30 a.m. and 12:45 p.m. September 25th, a celebration of the peace that followed. Salute their service, honor their hope. For further information, go to 75th.com. www.commemoration.org.